welcome to Cat Context Podcast, episode 26 for Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013. We have a slightly different show today from usual. 2 weeks ago, I got together with regular podcast co-hosts Aralade and Alindriel and special guest Mangle, and we talked so much that the only thing to do was split it up into two shows. So last episode, we talked to Mangle about life as an indie developer, but on this week's episode, the four of us are going to talk about our impressions of BioShock Infinite and whether there's still room for engaging stories within a first-person shooter structure. And just a warning, this will be full of BioShock Infinite spoilers, so if you haven't finished it yet, go do that first and then come listen. Enjoy the episode, and don't forget that we're giving away a copy of the Humble Blendo Bundle to one random person who sends us a question or comment over voicemail, email, or Twitter. So let us know if you think there's a place for deep narratives in shooter games. But now, on with the show.
Okay, BioShock Infinite.
Everybody who doesn't want to know about everything about BioShock Infinite should probably go away now.
Yeah, it's going to be all on the table, so go away now if you don't want to hear about it.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Finish BioShock Infinite.
And then come back.
I finished it last night at like 2 a.m. just in time for the podcast. And I really, really liked the ending. It was bittersweet. It was, I don't know. I thought it was highly appropriate. Okay, that's it. That's all I got.
Yeah. So when I was going through that, Talon was on the couch with me. We were playing it like sort of jointly-ish. And she was like, oh my god, he's Walter Bishop.
Who's Walter Bishop?
Nobody. That's for Fringe. Sorry, spoilers for Fringe. Reverse spoilers for Fringe. Except not really, because that's like how it happens in the first episode or two, I think.
Actually, no, it's the end of season one.
Okay. Spoilers for season one of Fringe, sorry. How can you nerds not know about Fringe?
It's those nerds. They're Canadian. It's an illness.
You probably don't even have Fringe yet, do you?
it's
which is really funny
Vancouver.
Because it was shot in Vancouver, yeah. Like every other piece of television.
It's on Canadian Netflix now, I think. I was just looking at it today, thinking it looked interesting.
Oh, Fringe was really good. You should watch Fringe.
Anyway, yes, Arrow?
Okay, so, God, I don't know where to start. The whole middle section needed to not be there.
Which middle section?
The entire middle bit. The whole Vox Populi, Daisy Fitzroy bullshit needed to not be in this game.
So basically, once you go through the first tear.
I just think that was really irresponsible writing, and it kind of set the tone for the whole rest of the game for me. You can't pull that both sides are just as bad thing with that. If games existed in a vacuum, if our media in general existed in a vacuum, that would be one thing, but they don't. This game and that story exists in a world where the people in power in this country specifically got completely freaked out a couple of months ago because statistics came out that white babies were the minority birth. Because, oh my god, now all the brown babies will take over and they'll kill us all. And then they go and they do shit like this, which plays into every racist stereotype about why the man has got to keep it down. And it makes me sad.
I totally didn't get that from this game. I did find myself yelling at the screen that no, they're not as bad. It is clear that the racial implications are front and center. And I think that is a perfectly reasonable response. But that is not necessarily the response that I had.
We all have our perspectives, which is
fine.
I don't think Ken Levine was prepared to tell the story he was trying to tell.
I don't think he was trying to tell a story about racism, though.
Yeah, neither do I.
Then it shouldn't have been in there at all. If you're not going to tell that story, then you need to not use those tropes. That's what I said when I meant when I said that I felt like it was irresponsible.
I think there was a lot of that sort of Vox switch that was unexplained. If I was a betting woman, I would put some money on the fact that the first DLC is going to be alternate Vox Booker, who is the hero of the the Revolution, which will probably add a little more backstory to that. So I agree. I think the whole Daisy Fitzroy, you know, Elizabeth thing, there wasn't enough information behind that for that to really make a lot of sense. Although, I mean, there's some things in the plot. But to me, the whole story is more about, it's basically a story about baptism, both a literal and a figurative sense.
Which is why I agree that was probably the intention, which is why my very strong feeling is that whole middle section needed to not exist. I think it would have been a more effective story, basically with more Rosencrantz and Guildenstern all the time, forever. Really, just get everyone else out of the game. I just want them.
Did we pick up on the fact that they are the same person?
Well, they're not the same person, but they're the same person.
Yeah. They are the same person, but from different universes?
Right.
And I'm pretty sure the brother is from Booker that we know, his universe.
I don't think it matters.
I don't think it matters either. I don't know. There was also a part afterwards about stuff that was very confusing. Or did you guys watch all the way through the credits? Because I didn't the first time. I had to go look it up on YouTube.
Yes.
I did, yeah.
Okay.
This song was pretty.
The song was pretty. Like,
That's why I was still watching the credits when there was the second scene. The song was pretty.
I think I like accidentally pressed a button or something. I don't know. It was a really cool game atmospherically. The atmosphere was awesome. I have read a lot about this game now. There were a lot of people who said stuff like the fact that all of the citizens disappeared after things went badly, like really broke the immersion and blah, blah, blah. I just didn't have that problem at all.
I did a little because I couldn't tell if that was trying to imply something about the world or if it was just lazy programming. For the same reason as like there were only like two or three NPC faces and designs in general. And I couldn't tell if they were doing that on purpose or if they were lazy. And I'm pretty sure the answer is lazy.
I'm sure you could argue it both ways depending on what you want to say, right?
Right.
There's certainly a narrative that could be constructed around that being intentional, but I also agree that it's probably not because of that. It probably wasn't an intentional narrative fact.
Honestly, I think a lot of the flaws along those lines are because the whole game is forced inside this first-person shooter, and I'm not even sure it was that good of a shooter. I really, really, really like the story, but I think you really had to sandwich in the story into the first-person shooter concept. And I think things like there not being non-combat people after a certain point is a victim of having to make it a first-person shooter.
Right. I think it does suffer a lot from its machinery, I guess. And, I mean, there's no real point to the Vigors. Like, with Bioshock, Adam was the point of the game. I mean, that was why everyone went crazy. That was why you had to go and clean everything up. And this is just, look at what we have made. Special superpowers. Hooray!
Yeah, I mean, I also got the point. I also got the feeling in the first Bioshock, I never played 2 yet.
It's the same thing.
Right. So Adam played a role in the destruction of the world and the people who lived in Rapture. Underwater. Rapture. Thank you. The people who live in Rapture actually participated in the use of Vigors. I didn't necessarily get the feeling that people who lived in Columbia participated in the use of Vigors outside of, like, the guys who were on fire wearing fire flamethrower suits also.
And the crows and, yeah.
Right, no, there's actually dialogue from NPCs saying, we're not going to try this until it's been worked out a little more.
I also don't care. I mean, like, honestly, like, those... No, I'm serious. Like there are, in fact, a lot of trappings of the first-person shooter genre that it lives in. I don't really care about that. I mean, it probably... I can see how for some people it would weaken the story or the immersion or whatever. I was way more interested in the overarching story and big, sort of the big picture stuff, because I think that is an interesting, I think there were interesting things to be said there. What I didn't really appreciate, and I think my biggest trouble with the game, is that they hid a lot of the really important dialogue or story elements in voxophones that you didn't always find. So
yes,
yeah, I think I finished up missing six.
I don't even remember how many, but I never got any of the ones that implied that Comstock was you, or Booker. Comstock and Booker were the same person, but and that
there are some.
I don't know if there are any of those.
Yeah, I went on YouTube to listen to all of them, and you're right that there's some really critical story elements that you're not going to find.
In both worlds, right, like the same amount of time has passed, but Comstock is clearly 40 to 50 years older than Booker. Well, maybe 30.
Only aged. He's not actually older.
Right, right. So, but he appears older. He appears like an older right. gentleman, and Booker appears to be a strapping young middle-aged man.
Right, they cheated, basically.
Right, but so, and they've implied really heavily that, they flat out said that Comstock aged because of his experimentation. He was dying of cancer, and he was infertile, and that's why he, like, wanted to go steal a baby, etc. Right? And I didn't get, I think I got some of the infertility stuff, but I definitely didn't get the aging stuff. And a lot of that seemed really important, I mean, to sort of understanding how all of the narrative elements fit together. I mean, especially in the, like, 45-minute exposition dump at the end.
I agree. I think the voxophone, the whole concept of having a voice talking to you is really atmospheric, but having really critical elements of the story be basically hidden is not effective storytelling.
Yeah. That was my one major issue with the game. It is true that it is not the best shooter as somebody who's played a bunch of other shooters. It's just not. I mean, I think Mass Effect 3 was probably better shooter, and that wasn't a great shooter. But, like, again, like I said, I didn't really care about that stuff. And I know there's been a lot of criticism about that. I don't know. I mean, I like the parallel universe story. I like that there are implications about what it means to try and clean your sins, I guess. Right? I mean, like, there are implications about what that means and if it's possible and what the consequences are, etc. I also like the fact that people are still talking about it a couple months after people started finishing it. That to me is better sign of anything, a better sign of it as an indicator of the genre than anything.
I really like the ending. I thought it was appropriately, I don't know, it was bittersweet. It was hopeful and yet, you know, terrible at the same time, which is a tough line to walk.
How did you find it hopeful?
He had Anna back.
Yeah, Anna.
Maybe.
Booker is going to live his life with Anna.
Well, that's sort of implied, but not really. You don't know.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
you do.
I think that's pretty
I don't know,
because,
like, Booker died and all of them disappeared.
No, Booker died in every reality where he became Comstock.
Right.
So there's never a Comstock, there's never a Columbia. The Lutesses are doing their experiments on their own. I don't know, maybe funding Hitler.
That's for Bioshock 3.5.
There's A Booker and B Booker, and A Booker takes the baptism and becomes Comstock. B Booker refuses the baptism and goes back and becomes a lush in his rundown apartment. So they killed all the A Bookers, but the B Bookers are still okay, and Anna exists.
Yeah, Elizabeth does not exist.
I don't actually think that is what is being said.
You're wrong, but that's fine.
I finished it like a month ago, and then I had to wait for you guys after you all told me to play this game. So now I'm trying to, like, replay it in my mind.
Yeah, there's no Elizabeth. That's why they all went away. Because the only way there's an Elizabeth is if there was a Comstock to hire the Lutesses to steal her.
Well, it's possible that there's one Elizabeth, too, because the scene actually fades before the last Elizabeth, the one that you've been with, disappears.
In the game, right. And that it could be that she's the core Anna.
Except she can't be, because she also lived with Comstock.
Right. I mean, I don't know, soul, whatever.
My impression was that Elizabeth actually disappeared, because they had kind of the plinking piano note of Elizabeth's disappearing.
Yeah, but go watch the actual scene, and she doesn't.
No, it's true. They do cut before that. But they do the plink of disappearing Elizabeth's.
They do. I mean, they also do, but they also, in the after-credits scene, they make a, I mean, I think that you can't say that that happened for sure or didn't happen for sure and say that Anna was in the bedroom at the end for sure or not for sure also.
They showed her. I mean, you can hear her.
They totally didn't show her.
You can hear her. You can hear her.
He's, like, been crazy and hearing shit his entire time. Plus, he's probably, like, drunk anyway. And he was like, Anna, question mark?
I would agree with Ellie that there is somewhat of a question mark, but my feeling is that the implication was that there is Anna and no Elizabeth. And I like that, goddammit.
I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate, but I mean, yeah. I mean, in the end, he's kind of redeemed, but not really redeemed still, because he still worked for the Pinkertons, he still killed all the people at Wounded Knee, he still was a drunkard for however many years.
I think he was the drunkard because he lost his wife and daughter.
Not because of all the shit that went down? I mean, like, that whole scene in the historical museum where you talk to your captain, I can't remember his name.
Slate.
Yeah. That heavily implied that Booker was fucked up because of Wounded Knee.
Because mathematically he would have been 16.
There's also the heavy implication that he's part Sioux.
There is?
Yeah, that's in a Vox.
It's in a Vox?
Yep.
Yes.
Fucking Bioshock, Jesus.
My impression is that the redemption of Booker occurs when he lets the Elizabeths drown him.
I think that too is implied, in which case he's baptized again.
Usually you don't get baptized to death. Well, I mean, I don't know what kind of churches you've been to, but
we're walking a tightrope of pissing everybody off.
Isn't that kind of the point? No, I know. I thought that was our objective here.
Anyway.
Can I got a question for you.
Yeah.
As somebody who hasn't played this game at all, can I like steal 30 seconds more?
Absolutely.
That'll be enough for the question, not for the answers. But what do you think the future is for games like this one, where if they just wanted to tell a story, it would have been more effective, perhaps not inside a shooter. And if they wanted to make a shooter, it would have been more effective to do it without all the story and stuff. So, I mean, they make this because they spent so much money creating it that they needed to appeal to lots and lots of different people. Or, you know, do you think these kind of games are still going to be around in 5 years' time?
Man, that's hard.
I think so. I hope so.
I think we're at the pinnacle of what we can do with the story-driven FPS.
Oh, you're totally, totally wrong.
Whoa, hold on, let me finish my sentence. I think between Bioshock Infinite and,
Don't say Far Cry.
No, not Far Cry. The
Fallout.
The sad shooty military one.
Mass Effect. Spec Ops.
Spec Ops, thank you. Between Bioshock Infinite and Spec Ops, I feel we are really hitting the limit of how we can subvert the typical narrative and put it into a first-person shooter. So to me, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what's going to be down the road. I mean, maybe it's going to be, I don't know. I have no idea, but I feel like we really sort of are hitting the limit of what we can do with this. So in 5 years from now, I don't think it's going to be there. There'll be something else.
I think that very heavily relies on the fact that one of the things you think you're getting out of this game is subverting the shooter stereotype. And I mean, if you talk, the creator of Far Cry 3 also said that, you know, he thought that he was doing a bunch of that shit, and then a bunch of people basically just said that he was putting a white man in a, you know, pedestal of godliness over some island people. And that was totally received differently. I guess the game part of what's going on is different than the storytelling part of what's going on.
Yeah.
To some degree, they're related, I guess. And, like, you know, there's definitely, I mean, I don't know, there's still horror movies being made. There's still action movies being made and comedies.
Do you think the shooting in the middle is just filler in between story? And it just happens that FPS is a good filler because it's something that lots of people are familiar with and it's palatable for them? like Walking Dead did story without filler, right? And I think it was very successful. And there are plenty of FPSs that do shooters without story and are very successful. Just seems like trying to combine the two is, I'm just not quite sure why they do it.
Well, I think BioShock is it's a really strange hybrid, because not only do you have the RPG elements and the FPS elements, you also have collection elements like the voxes and that kind of thing. And usually that kind of gameplay where you have to, you know, find the story in the secret hidden areas is something that's done most often in like Japanese survival horror games.
Or like Skyrim, right? I haven't played it that much, but I've heard, the things I hear is that a lot of story interesting elements are sort of like off in their own side world, side quest areas, and you may or may not ever run across them.
Yeah, there's a big exploration kind of element to it.
I think why people keep going back to FPSs in this situation is because it's a really, really easy way to give the player, to make them feel instantly like they're in control of the situation. So right off the bat, you are the character and you are changing your environment, which happens to be by shooting something. So that's why they tend to go back to that concept. Does it actually mesh with a really good story? I don't think so.
I think you've broken Ellie.
I'm trying to wrap my head around this question, because I think it's actually a really, really good question and probably a very important question to be asking and talking about. I think that a game like BioShock for me with a first-person shooter bent is really good for introspective stories, because at least for me, when I'm playing a game like that, I have a much greater tendency to connect on a personal level with the character, the main character. Like things are happening to me, and speech and stuff is being directed at me, and I'm the person doing it, right? Which is a little bit different than like a third-person story or game for like Uncharted, where I really think of Uncharted as Nathan Drake's story, not as my story. I think of Mass Effect as Shepard's story and not my story. So I don't think it's that much different from like a first person writing, like novel writing versus a third person novel writing.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting that it puts you directly in not just in the, I mean, you are the protagonist. You see through their eyes. You make them move around in the world, that kind of thing. Like it makes you the hero of the story, which is different to some of the other styles.
And it's a good format if you want to sort of boondoggle the player, because, you know, they expect to only know what their character knows and not have any sort of, a third person can seem somewhat omniscient. So, you know, at the end when they're like, "No, Booker, you are Comstock." It can seem a lot more of a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, which is sometimes an easy writing trope, too. I mean, that it's awfully close to, "Oh, it was all a dream."
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say, right? Because, so, I went to see Iron Man 3 this morning.
You spoil me any more than Gwyneth Paltrow already has, and I will punch you.
I'm not going to spoil anything other than to say that there are a lot of explosions. And there is much fighting and lots of people die in a way that always happens in an action movie and they never talk about, right? I don't necessarily think that the tropes of an action movie take away from the ability to tell an appropriate story or reasonable story in that genre. And I don't think that the tropes of a first-person shooter itself necessarily interferes with being able to tell a story through that genre or through that medium.
Yeah, I guess in my mind, what I'm thinking more of is to create a game like BioShock Infinite costs them a lot of money, like, you know, way up in the tens of millions of dollars. And part of the reason why indie developers can be successful is that if they just capture the essence of one particular thing in BioShock and release that as a game itself, then from a marketing perspective, they're doing way better, right? So I could, Telltale Games, I guess, with Walking Dead, did story brilliantly. And there are other, you know, Counter-Strike was a mod released by a bunch of guys, and that's just, you know, changed the way that first-person shooters are even thought about. So I just wonder, in the long run, whether big studios can afford to keep on spending the amount of money that they spend on these kind of things, when they're just going to get attacked from all sides. On one side, smaller companies catering to the audience that wants story. On the other side, smaller companies catering to the audience that wants a shooter. On the other side, another company catering to the audience that wants exploration and collecting and that kind of thing. Whether it will continue to make sense to try to shoehorn that all into one game.
One thing I've seen in the wake of Bioshock Infinite that is new, at least new that I've seen, is people pushing back against story-driven games, whether it's Bioshock Infinite or Journey or any of that stuff. And that seems to me to be, it's not something that I agree with, but it seems to be a
Those
rising sentiment.
Wrong.
Well, yes. They are wrong. But I think you're absolutely right, Mangle, that we are seeing that breakup of the market. So it is going to be more difficult to do that, because I think first-person shooters or action game fans or whatever are pushing back against having heavy story in their games. And more people want heavy story in their games.
I don't honestly think that's true. If a first-person shooter franchise came out, maybe I'm wrong. I am not a huge Battlefield person or a huge Medal of Honor, you know, yearly purchaser or anything like that. But I think that if those games came out, I mean, that there is certainly a market for the multiplayer FPS game, and only multiplayer FPS game. And if, you know, the newest Medal of Honor didn't have any story portion, it would probably be just as successful to a large degree. But I think for the majority of people who play games, if all you get is the sort of streamlined shooter experience, I just don't think that's going to be nearly as successful as something with at least cursory story.
Man, I get bummed when my fighting games don't have a story mode.
Yeah.
But with all due respect, we're not that target audience. I mean, I think we perhaps underestimate the huge, huge, huge number of people, you know, college kids who just want to play Halo.
I think that's bullshit, because I played a lot of Halo in college, and I also appreciated other kinds of games. Like, if every game was just multiplayer Halo, there's no way I would be doing what I'm doing today, game-wise.
And also, it would be really boring.
I just honestly don't believe that the industry could survive with just really narrow games. And indie games are, certain indie games are very narrow, and that's fine. Indie games don't have to appeal to a large portion of, you know, as wide of an audience, because they're not out to make as much money. And they don't have the budget behind them. Their just scale isn't as big, right?
Not that I think Mangle would mind millions and millions of dollars for Flowerpot.
I think there's a certain amount of money out in the market that consumers are willing to spend on games. And I mean, maybe that pot just gets bigger. But I think the game that's taking the most out of the market right now, I mean, it's probably still World of Warcraft, but I bet number two is World of Tanks, which I can tell you there's no story there. It's just it's very much a shooter. But so they're taking big chunks out of the market. And I think from a marketing perspective, there are some genres that exist nicely together. Like, I think Borderlands 2 is a great example of shooter meets exploration, collector, RPG, where all the elements naturally fit really well together. But I mean, that has a story, and the story is kind of entertaining, and it gives you a reason to keep on going in the game.
Yeah, it's fairly shallow, though.
But yeah, it's shallow. Yeah, because that's not really what the game is about. I just have a hard time with deep story and shooter existing side by side without any logical connection between the two.
If you look, I have facts now. You look it up on the internet. Top 10 best-selling games in 2012. You've got like Call of Duty, Madden, NBA, FIFA. Call of Duty. Oh, Modern Warfare and Black Ops, Halo 4, Just Dance 4. I mean, none of these have story.
Yeah, but I don't think that that is necessarily indicative of the industry as a whole. I mean, yes, those are top sellers, but part of the reason they're top sellers is because they are mass appeal and NBA, Madden, FIFA, at least, are all based on something that has universal appeal outside of the gaming world.
And outside of the United States, for that matter.
I mean, FIFA is probably much less played in the United States than overseas. I don't know. I mean, on the other hand, there's, you know, I want people to still give David Cage money for Heavy Rain and for Beyond Two Souls. You know, I want people to experiment with things like what Remember Me looks like, even if it probably won't deliver. And I mean, like, I don't know, the top grossing products doesn't say anything about quality or sustainability to me.
No, but it says what people are buying right now. Like, I agree. I would love, like, you and I are on the same page as far as what I would like to see in the marketplace. I'm just saying I'm not sure the marketplace is actually going to accept what we want.
I don't think that's true either. I mean, like, it's been going for 20 years and there have been story games for 20 or 30 years. I mean, we all played, like, Zork and Myst and...
Technically, even Atari games had story. I mean, Pitfall's story was pretty straightforward, but...
but it was there. And, yeah. And, like, games had inserts to tell you the story a lot of times because they weren't able to tell them through gameplay. I mean, I think that the thing about, you know, the Madden and Medal of Honors of the world is that when you look at, say, the four of us, we probably each buy way more than five games a year. But say that we each bought five games a year and we could only buy five games a year, right? The thing about a game like Madden is that it fits into a bunch of different groups of people's purchasing patterns and has a lot of crossover appeal. So, like, for the four of us here, we might buy a different set of games and it'd be the top grossing. But, like, I don't know. I mean, I just because most people buy one game doesn't mean that that is the only game they're buying that year. And I think that is a trap of those kinds of lists.
No, I was just going to agree with you. I think it's always going to be true that if a company produces an amazing game, then it's going to be commercially successful. It's just, and people will find a way to purchase that game. So maybe the companies in the industry just get better and better at producing games and that pool of money just gets bigger and bigger. That's possible.
All right, you can call us. Let us know what you think about this podcast at 347-565-4673, otherwise known as 347-56-LEOR. You can also email us at podcast@leorblog.com. You can contact me on Twitter at @leores, L-I-O-R-E-S. That is it. Check us out on our website, leorblog.com/catcontextpodcast. We're also on iTunes. We're on Stitcher Radio. And if you enjoyed this, give us 5 stars. And thank you very much, Mango, for coming on and telling us about your experiences.
My pleasure. It was fun.
And Ellie and Arrow, thank you both again for coming along. So that is it. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And until then, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.